And a toxin linked to motor neuron disease has been found in Australian algal blooms for the very first time. Its presence here has long been suspected, but has never actually been tested for properly until now. To find out more, we're joined in the studio by Brendan Main, a PhD candidate at the University of Technology, Sydney. His work focuses on the role algal toxins play in the onset and progression of degenerative diseases. A very uplifting topic. Thank you for joining us, Brendan.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So my general conception of algal blooms, I'm sure most people's, is that they're bad and you don't want to go near them. Why are they, like, what's bad about them?
Yeah, so we've known for quite a while now that they make a lot of different toxins. Some of them cause things like skin rashes, other ones can make you sick, make you vomit, and even cause neurological issues in the short term. Our research seems to show that they also have a long-term effect as well.
And so what exactly is this toxin that we're talking about? Like, is it different to what we see elsewhere? Is it like a new toxin that's only found in algal blooms? Or
yeah, so the toxins that our group study they're really similar to the amino acids that make up your proteins in your body. And so a bunch of different plants and animals make these toxins, and this one particular, BMAA, is made by algae.
Right. So this long-term effects you're talking about, as I alluded to in the opening, motor neuron disease, that's bad, right? That's definitely sounds like one of the bad ones.
Yeah, it's about as bad as it gets.
So
MND is a progressive neurodegenerative disorder. It results in complete loss of muscle function, and it's normally a death sentence for patients within 4 to 6 months of being diagnosed. It's a pretty awful disease.
So it's obviously something you don't want to avoid. And also, I mean, obviously I've known that algal blooms, personally I've seen algal blooms in Australian waterways for, you know, years at least. Why is this the first time we've been testing for this compound?
Testing in Australia has only just started because really we've only just started looking at BMAA in general as researchers globally. In the last probably 10 years, BMAA research, or the area that we look at, has started to take off. We've just been a bit slower in Australia, really.
And is there, you know, is a bloom being gone any sort of signal of safety? So if we clear out the bloom, does that actually deal with the problem entirely or not?
Well, that's something that we need to continue looking at. We want to do long-term studies in the future to see if the toxin hangs around in the environment. I would assume that after the bloom is gone, usually within a few days, the toxin should clear out of the water.
And are all blooms home to this particular toxin, or how do you actually test for it?
Yeah, so international research has shown that a massive variety of species of cyanobacteria make this toxin, and also some other algal species. Testing for it is really complicated. Because it's an amino acid structure, it's really similar to all the amino acids that make up all the proteins of all the things that are alive. So you can imagine if you're looking for something that's in everything else, it's like looking for a needle in a stack of needles.
So you have to do some like human genome project level kind of stuff to figure it out.
Yeah, it's a lot of mass spec work.
Oh God, that's centrifuges and lots of fun stuff.
Yeah.
And so in particular, there is the Riverina area is a hotspot for cases of motor neuron disease. And the town of Griffith has a prevalence of motor neuron disease that's nearly 7 times higher than the national average, which seems pretty significant. And your testing has involved a river near Griffith that is positive for this BMAA. How significant is this sort of in light of this high rate of MND?
Yeah, so we tested the Murrumbidgee River in a couple of different locations. And obviously the Murrumbidgee runs through the Riverina, and it's just south of Griffith. For a long time, people have been looking for the reason why so many people in Griffith end up with MND. It's a ridiculously high number compared to the national average.
What is the national average on MND?
The national average, it's around, I think it's about 8.4 people per 100,000, I think, something like that. In one of the articles that we have linked to ours, it's an interview by a neurologist named Dominic Rowe, who does a lot of, looks after a lot of the patients in the Riverina. And at one point, he had 12 patients in Griffith for a town with 25,000 people. So the maths there is obviously a little bit odd. Looking for a reason is a big goal for us.
So what can you, like, even if you have all this knowledge, let's say, you know, you're able to tell, you know, like you see algal blooms and you detect BMAA, what can you actually do about it? What can you do?
Yeah. So there's going to be a couple of different approaches in the future, hopefully. One is obviously reminding people to stay away from contaminated water. And that's a big one. I think a lot of people are aware that blooms aren't great for you, but A lot of people just think that it's going to be a skin irritation or maybe not feeling great if they swallow a bunch of water. This research really shows that it's a lot of other problems that algal blooms can cause. The other thing is, it looks like there's probably a combination of both genetics and environmental problems that cause MND. So hopefully if we can nail down the environmental problems, we can move on to the other genetic factors and we can start to warn people if they maybe have a risk factor for contracting MND.
And I guess with the water, like how easy is it for it to be transferred between systems? Like, can it easily transfer between waterways or into animals that we then eat? Like, how does it move through the ecosystem?
Yeah, so that's another interesting fact about BMAA, because it has its amino acid like structure. Obviously, the body is the human body, and also plants and animals are adapted to take in amino acids and use them for various things. One of the theories that we have for the toxicity of BMAA is that it's mistaken for an amino acid by the body and gets put into proteins. So that can occur both in us, but also in plants and animals. So we could be seeing like a buildup of BMAA, almost like a heavy metal.
Oh,
in,
wow.
In things that are...
So if you've ever been exposed to algal bloom, you're kind of like stuck with it.
Well, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So where are you planning to go next with your research now that you've kind of looked at this identification?
Yeah, so the next big step will be a monitoring program for us, trying to get a few different waterways and looking at them over the long term. That's going to let us both know how long the toxin stays in the ecosystem and also hopefully be able to follow it from the algae through the water and then into plants and animals.
And is there a wider strategy around this? Is there a wider kind of knowledge or planning around algal blooms? Are they something that are just kind of creeping into the forefront now?
No, I mean... Blooms are managed by a lot of different state agencies, and they have been for a long time because they are obviously toxic.
Yeah.
And they're really bad for farmers, especially when you want to water livestock. You've obviously got to use water from rivers, and if that water is going to kill your livestock, it's not great. So they are already part of massive management programs. It'll just be a part of bringing this into those management programs.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Brendan, for coming in and telling us about it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.